Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Evan.
And hey, everybody, it's me, Kate.
Welcome to Mid Crimes.
Been in the pod lab together for a minute, so like matchup energy is like a little off because I miss you.
We gotta fix it.
I
think we're gonna be in a spot where the next episode I can be in the pod lab. I'm pretty sure. Although
amazing.
That would probably be around Easter Sunday, but actually, which we should still do because we were together last year on Easter on vacation.
So we were in Florida. Making Easter happen at our vacation home that we had, which was super fun. And Devin is like a little fairy princess with the magic that she creates for her kids. And it's adorable to watch.
Well, and so last year I got to create it for your kids, which was just amazing. Like your kids are like, what is this chocolate bunny trail? It was adorable.
It was so cute. Yeah, because I'm not that cool. Like I do the Easter egg hunt. I do the baskets. I do not create a trail of actual candy leading from their bedrooms all the way down to where their like little Easter treat baskets are. I don't do that. That's above and beyond shit right there.
Listen, I don't think she's ever had a shout out on this show, so we'll do it. Let's give a shout out to my mother.
Okay.
Because
Cindy.
That was all her when I was a child.
Was it really?
So
oh
my God, she gets really pumped that I carry on that. There was even one time. Everyone, listen, you only hear us every 2 weeks, so you got to get an update on our lives.
Yeah, everyone
but
calm down.
There was even one year my brother was house-sitting for my aunt across the street the night before Easter. So the Easter bunny left a trail of candy from her front door all the way across the street to our house, to his basket.
You're kidding me.
And he's like probably 16, maybe 17. And he got a chocolate candy trail from my aunt's front door all the way across the street.
Okay, yep. Cindy.
It's badass, Cindy. Right?
Holy shit, Cindy. Wow. Like, I loved you before, but I think right now I love you just a tiny bit more. Holy shit. Okay, Cindy.
And maybe the bunny trail makes up for my lack of leprechaun holiday spirit because I told you last week, I'm like, when did this leprechaun trap thing become a thing? Because I was completely unaware. And
that was not a thing when we were kids. No way.
I mean, I had a kindergartner last year and I still did not know it was a thing. So I don't know where this has come from, but I completely failed because my children woke up wondering why the leprechaun didn't leave them any gold. And I'm like,
you didn't fail.
What?
You did not fail. Let's normalize not having to create an otherworldly experience for our kids for every tiny minor holiday. Like the kids are now coming home expecting that the leprechaun is going to come visit them. And now you got to pantomime a whole fucking situation in which a leprechaun is leaving footprints and peeing in your toilet and, you know, dismembering your home.
We do our little friend on the shelf, right? Uh-huh. He gets moved. They get a little trinket every Valentine's Day. Birthdays are right in March. Like it, and then you got Easter. And then what? We're not even Irish. So
yeah, we're not even Irish. And you know what? This holiday is for the adults, is what I say. This is when we are supposed to be able to just like eat some corned beef and drink.
That's when That holiday is for when Aaron can go braless.
Yes, thank you. Aaron go braless.
Aaron go braless and not let's trap a leprechaun. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Right. Enough said.
Apparently, I'm the St. Patrick's Day Grinch. Like,
Scrooge of St. Patrick's Day.
Can't I just
right
cook
now
my corned beef and cabbage and call it a day? Like,
yeah. I mean, I feel like that's enough. I genuinely feel like that's enough. I'm sorry if we're offending anybody. Like, actually, I'm not. That is absurd if you're offended by that.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So we do have Patreons. We have Sam. Sam. Hi, Sam.
Sam,
we love
I
you.
Am.
We have Laura. Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Hi, Laura.
Thank you.
Love the one namers.
I know. We have Melissa Halim. Melissa, girl.
Wow.
Yes.
Hi, Melissa.
We love you. We have Krista Sirois or Sirois. But if you're going to be nasty about it, you're going to say Sirois. Hey, Krista. We love you. Thank you. Welcome.
Nasty.
And then last but not least, Allison Lewis Santiago.
Ooh,
you
that's
guys,
a fun one.
I know. We are so touched and so thankful for your contribution and for your support. Thank you so, 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 so much for joining.
You're all
and
absolutely amazing.
And speaking of Ireland, Scotland, and that part of the world, which I know that they are separate countries, people, but I have a cool creature. It's called the Gillydew. And the Gillydew is a benevolent fairy spirit from Scottish Highland folklore. And it's a renowned protector of the forest. They are described as small in stature, often with wild hair and clothes made of moss and leaves. So basically my alter ego, like in a critter.
How did you find this?
Google. Durr.
Wow.
I Google. Yeah. And anyway, that is where we're at, folks. That is what we're doing.
Here we are.
Welcome. And so we have an awesome case today because you know what we haven't done in a while, Devin? You know what we haven't done in a while? You know how we haven't done in a while?
A dentist.
A dentist, motherfucker.
How could I guess?
I know. Good guess, Devin. All right. So this is a two-parter because I cannot help myself.
I'm already nervous because I literally hate the dentist, so it's fine.
So this guy's the worst. He's the worst. And if you think that in this episode we kind of like reached the pinnacle of his misdeeds, you are wrong. There is more. It does get worse in part two. There's just a lot of just really upsetting stuff in here. There's going to be more of a trigger warning in the next one, but for continuity's sake, I'm just going to give trigger warnings here. There's going to be trigger warnings for domestic violence, for infant loss, child loss, abortion, and sexual abuse. That is where we're at.
Great.
Yeah. So buckle up, everybody. I'm about to bum you guys out pretty hard. So we are talking today about Colin Howell. And Colin Howell was born in 1959 in Belfast, Ireland. And he grew up in sort of this area at the time. It was kind of like a hotbed of political conflict, if you will. Belfast had been sort of divided by civil and religious strife because Catholic nationalists were in favor of Northern Ireland's independence and fought against the Protestant loyalists who wanted the region to remain part of the UK. So there was a lot of like upset. It was a very tumultuous time for the nation itself. And there was a lot of social unrest. And a lot of it was caused by religious differences. And it inspired people to become even more pious than they may have originally been, like in many cases. So The Irish were sort of like clinging to their religious communities, their churches, their parishes for like a sense of security. And they were oftentimes like going to their church elders for, you know, advice and for security and things like that. And it was a big source of comfort for people in this really hard time was their religion. And so it became a very prominent part of the lives of many Irish people during this time. And like, even if maybe they didn't grow up super religious, a lot of people sort of fell into it. And then it became a very strong presence in their lives. So Colin Howell's parents were really no exception to this, and they had hoped to instill and pass on the importance of their religion in their children, and their son was Colin Howell, again born in 1959. And the Howells were Protestant, specifically Evangelical Baptists. And according to author Derek Henderson, and he wrote the book called Let This Be Our Secret. And this was a huge source of information for me in doing research on this particular situation. According to Derek Henderson, every Sunday they went to church with zero exception, and they attended three separate church services every Sunday. So his entire Sunday was taken up by church, basically. Wow. He was a very loyal member of the Christian youth organization that they had called the Boys Brigade. And it was like a boys only, like boy preteens and teens who were planning on pursuing a career in religion or like becoming a missionary of some kind, essentially. And he really wanted early on in his like teen years to be respected in the eyes of his fellow, like of his congregation. So, and that's like everybody's goal right now, because again, everybody's, you know, piety is a little bit heightened. So like how religious you are, how pure you are, how upstanding you are, how helpful you are, like you're a better person, essentially. And like you're better than the guy sitting next to you if you do more for the church is how this became interpreted. So his devotion to his beliefs ultimately kind of set him apart from a lot of his peers. And he started becoming a little bit of a loner, because even in that situation, even in that environment, he was even more pious and more devoted to religion than the average bear. And so instead of, you know, enjoying clubs and, you know, going out and hanging out with his friends, you know, even his like religious friends, even his, you know, community of boys, like the Boys Brigade, he wouldn't like go and socialize with them. He would rather stay home, because he was under the impression that his friends, if they are out, they're sinning. They're doing bad things. I can't participate in that. I can't be seen
even
with
though
that.
They were part of the same group and the same belong. Yeah. Like and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah. He's like, I don't even want to put myself in that situation. Like, I don't even want to leave the house. I don't want to tempt myself or anything like that. But
I mean, I'd be okay if my boys did that, because then they're not going to get into trouble. Right?
Sure. Maybe but not. Then behind closed doors, I know. And that, but you can tell like in the coming years, though, how this really kind of impacted his self-esteem, his self-worth. And right. he started looking upon what the urges he was experiencing as very shameful, and that he couldn't experience them in the traditional sense. Like the traditional sense, you know, when you're 19 years old, you know, most average people, at least these days, are going out, they're having sex, they're building relationships, they're, you know, maybe in college or getting higher education. You know, a lot of people, you know, that's the process. That's how you live. That's how you learn. But him being such a shut-in, essentially, led to him being like 19 years old. He would buy pornographic magazines, like to a really absurd extent. And he quickly developed an obsession with pornographic material and satisfying himself. And he felt very guilty about that. And it was like 90% of his personality was like hiding all of this stuff. Like he wanted his image.
It's not very pure. That's
no,
what he's
it's
trying.
Not. It's a sin.
Not. Yeah.
It's a sin. And he knows this. Like in his, and I'm not saying like it's a sin. I'm saying according to his values and religion at the time, this is a sin, right?
Correct.
He should not be indulging in this. He should not be doing any of this. Hey man, like if you know, you do that, like you do you, whatever. But like for him, that is very shameful. And for his community, that would have been very shameful. So he felt a lot of guilt because he still wanted to become a missionary. Like this was still his goal. But by the time he left secondary school, Colin had sort of decided that, you know what, if I'm going to be doing these things behind closed doors, he didn't feel good about becoming a missionary. He felt like he wouldn't be, you know, actually exhibiting those values. Like maybe he would on the outside, but he would know on the inside that he's not doing the right thing. So he actually shifted gears a little bit, and he decided that he wanted to become a doctor, though he wouldn't be like a man of the cloth. He would still be very respected. He would still have a great career. He would still be able to help people. And he'd still be able to maintain that image of like a very, staunch, very religious, very devout person and still be able to help people in this other way. And he was also very astute with the sciences. He loved the sciences. So to him, it felt like a natural path. But unfortunately, Colin wasn't quite a strong enough student to get into medical school, so he quickly kind of adjusted his sights on something that at the time was a little bit more achievable for him, which was dentistry. And just to kind of go into it, obviously the two fields overlap quite a bit, and they both take the title of doctor, and they both go to the same years of college and then postgraduate schooling. In terms of becoming a dentist, one could argue that the path is a little bit less arduous than that of a medical doctor, because medical school, from an admission standpoint too, is definitely more competitive than dental school, or at least it was. On average, dental school applicants need to have around a 3.5 grade point average, whereas with medical schools, you need like a 3.7 or 3.8 to even be considered to get in the door. So there's a lot more medical schools as compared to dental schools in the country. And as a result, there's a higher number of applicants and a higher competition for those coveted spots. But you have much better odds at getting into dentistry. So there's also, like, while you can make a wonderful living as a dentist and you can, you know, be super helpful to people, there also tends to be better work-life balance. There's a better working schedule. A lot of people who are in dentistry find that they can actually have a personal life and that they can have a family, and they don't necessarily have, you know, the life or death everyday decision-making and scenarios that, you know, doctors do. So,
or the grueling hours and everything.
Exactly. So it was around 1977 when Colin entered the dentistry program at Queen's University in Belfast, where he studied for 6 years. And there he continued going to church regularly. And then in 1980, he attracted the attention of a fellow parishioner, and her name was Leslie Clark. Now, like Colin, she was also pursuing a career in healthcare. She was studying there to become a nurse. And their similarities kind of ended there, though. They were extremely polar opposite people. He was quiet and kind of reserved, repressed even, while Leslie was loud and outgoing and friendly. And she wanted to be out and about. She wanted to be partying. She wanted to be out with her friends. She wanted to live life and experience life. And he was very much still a homebody. And he wasn't really interested in that as much.
Was he viewing her as a sinner?
I mean, how could he not, right? Because if he still has all those values, like, and she's doing all this stuff. I mean, she was religious for sure, but she just wasn't quite as burdened with the guilt of sinning as he was. And I'm not sure if maybe that came from the way his parents sort of ingrained religion into him, the like with his relationship with religion becomes so problematic and such a driving force of shame for him. Whereas other people, you know, have a very religion central life and upbringing and aren't like that at all. So I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, how they're presented that relationship in their youth and, you know, how their experience was for them. So I don't have a lot of information on, like, actually how his parents, you know, gave him, like, fostered that relationship with religion and how it might have shaped who he was. But even though they were really different, the attraction was very immediate, and it seemed like opposites were like really attracting there. Like she was kind of starting to bring out maybe a little bit more of a fun side to him. And he was really like very centering for her. So there was a little bit of a dark side to their affection, because the pair didn't exclusively decide to like be together yet. But after they started casually seeing each other, Leslie had gone out with another guy, which is totally within, you know, her right to do so. They had not declared their relationship exclusive at this point. So Leslie goes on a date with this other gentleman who's a resident, is a physician, who also they had met in school. And Colin found out about this and was fucking rip shit pissed. He was pissed. And he ended up showing up, huge red flag, numero uno, right? Mm-hmm. So he ends up showing up at her apartment building and unannounced. And she wasn't home yet, but he sat there and he fucking waited for her. And when she arrived with the junior doctor to her apartment building, Colin ended up getting in this guy's face, shoving him, and like essentially chased him out of the building. And
it's not a good look, dude.
Surprisingly enough, and I'm not sure if there was a factor here of like Leslie feeling kind of intimidated by the situation, but this was not anything that broke the deal for her because they actually went on to continue seeing each other and she decided to make the relationship exclusive at that
point. Don't you feel like that would kind of break the deal for you, or would you find that romantic 100%. In some way?
That's why I wonder if because of his aggression, she kind of felt coerced and felt obligated in this moment. That's what makes me feel that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it became clear that Leslie was not quite there with her feelings for Colin as much as he was into her. Like, she was not meeting him at that level, basically. He was, like, invested immediately. He's like, yes, I'm very serious about this. And she's, like, kind of, I don't know, man. Like, I kind of want to finish school and, like, date some other young doctors. Like, I don't know. Like, I just want to, like, live my life for a minute. But it seems like he kind of pulled her down to that level. She actually had gone and confided in a friend at some point that she had no intention of ever marrying Colin. She's like, I am not, like, genuinely, I'm not serious about this guy. Like, this to me is like a relationship that should have probably stayed a fling. And now I'm trying to like navigate how the hell I'm going to get out of this. But
it's reminding me of the show, the movie How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Like, that's what the vibe I'm getting right now.
Yeah, like, she's about to get him a love fern.
Yeah.
And see if he can keep it alive. I love that movie, dude. It's such a classic.
It's the love fern.
You let it die. Oh, my God. In 1982, things changed a little bit because Leslie became pregnant. And when Colin heard the news, he lost his shit a lot.
Well, she sinned.
Because pregnancy outside marriage was a marker of sin. It's not just her. He made that baby too.
I mean, and he's a sinner.
Unlike his former addiction to pornography, he could not just hide this. Like, he could not just, like, put this behind a closed door. Hiding it would require an act even more taboo than what they had already done, which was abortion. And at the time, again, this is another very shameful thing to have to endure. So Colin found himself having to choose between his image as this pristinely godly man and actually following his religion, which would mean, you know, not getting the abortion and
marrying her,
marrying her and being, you know, a father and a husband and living with his congregation, knowing that he had sex and a child outside of wedlock, which to him was pretty unacceptable. So unfortunately, that's not what they decided to do. He chose his image over everything else. And though Leslie evidently wasn't absolutely positive about going through with an abortion,
it makes me hate him already because, honestly, like, I know. He says I know. He has me these too. Values, but he's like, you know, like, his image is not matching his values. Or he's, you know what I mean? Like, he's...
I have said for a long
time... You chose the greater evil for your image, like, because when that gets out, like...
Yes, I've said for a long time, some of the worst people on this planet have images like this that they are willing to protect at all costs. And I mean, like, all costs. And they do some really shitty things to protect their own interests, which is really sad. So Leslie was very concerned about Colin and how he would react if she did not go through with the abortion. So she had the abortion because she felt like she had to. And it was not an easy process because most abortions were actually illegal in Northern Ireland at the time. So Leslie actually had to travel to London in order to end her pregnancy. And Colin and Leslie kind of found themselves in this exact same situation within a few months because,
again,
just months down the road, they both learned that Leslie was again pregnant, which anybody who's been a mom and has had a baby knows that they will tell you, be careful, because you once you've gotten pregnant, you can get pregnant very quickly, easily. Mm-hmm. Your body is like, yes, let's do this. Let's have all the babies. So learned that she was with child, she told Colin. Colin is, of course, has the exact same reaction. And he pressures her into having a second abortion,
okay,
which she goes
I hate
to
this
London
guy.
For.
I hate this guy.
He's,
again, we don't
honey,
even have to get
just,
to the dentist part, and I hate
girl,
this dude.
He's not even a fucking dentist yet, and we hate him.
Okay? I know.
This guy, when I say this guy is fucking, he's gross.
Stop having sex, dude. You're sinning.
He did not. Guess what happened just weeks after she returned home from London from her second abortion?
Oh, let me guess. She falls pregnant?
Yeah. So she once again learns that she is again expecting. And she then
and
went
so
on.
So wait, within weeks, first of all?
Yeah, like probably 4 weeks.
Dude, keep it
you
in
know?
Your zipper. Like,
yeah, can
let
we
her
all
heal.
Just like calm okay. down for a minute? Genuinely.
Like.
So she goes and she terminates a third pregnancy in London.
And she has not yet said, like, dude, I can't do this anymore. Like,
no.
we have to, you know, like.
I think she's probably scared of this guy. I think he's a very intimidating presence. And multiple abortions in a matter of months can
yeah.
destroy your uterus. And it poses serious health
body.
Risks, right?
Yeah.
And not only like health risks, but like even risks to, you know, your fertility. And like
mm-hmm.
these consecutive procedures could have resulted in scarring, you know, damage, internal bleeding, infection, and it would have increased, the risk would have increased exponentially with each procedure. So,
correct.
And then Leslie, as a nurse, would have known this. So she's going through all of this, you know, knowing what a risk and stress and immense pressure it's putting on her body, which is even sadder.
My mind right now is going, we listen and we don't judge. So
I know.
I'm listening and I'm not judging, although it's
the
really
most
hard.
Frustrating thing about this, too, is that. They had contraceptives in this day and age in this area.
It's not
condoms,
like,
IUDs, birth control pills were all available in the '80s. Like pretty,
IUDs
all she had to
too?
Do was pick up the phone. Oh yeah,
yeah.
A all copper right. IUD you could easily get.
Oh,
and
yeah.
all she had to do was make an appointment and call her doctor.
But they're Catholic.
I know.
They don't
I know.
Believe in that.
I know. So you'd rather risk. Three abortions than having one doctor's appointment to, you know, sully your image. It just, it blows my mind.
This is where I say the math ain't mathin'.
So,
by the way,
I think it's the definition of, is it idiocy or insanity where you just repeat the same thing over and over and over again
insanity.
And expect different results? That's insanity.
Insanity.
Okay, thank
yep.
you. Yep. So, as far as we know, Leslie did not face any health complications. She was very fortunate, but I'm sure there was like some kind of mental health impact from all of this. You know what I mean?
I mean, I would think.
I mean, the shame too, because again, she's religious. You know, she feels the shame of all of this, just like Colin does. So she's feeling, you know, not only probably grief over losing three pregnancies and, you know, experiencing grief over the children she might have had, but also like the shame that comes with all of that must have just been so hard for
something tells
her.
Me he's not feeling as much shame as what he claims.
As long as his image is fine, he's cool. Like genuinely, it seems like as long as everybody thinks he's like perfect, he has zero notes, zero complaints.
So he's like a Joshua Duggar, right?
Yeah, basically.
That's, yeah.
So in July 1983, you know, it had become apparent that she decided that she had been through all of this with Colin. She had already carried three of his children, even though it was brief. And she decided that, you know, the right thing to do in this scenario was to marry him, even though she had voiced in the past that she really was not interested in doing that. So in July of 1983, 24-year-old Colin and 23-year-old Leslie Clark walked down the aisle and perhaps it was because they trauma bonded a little bit too, like over the shame and the sadness of everything that happened, you know?
Well, my first thought is, can we stop getting the abortions now? Like,
yeah, can we just, can we just have the babies now? And yes, they can, and they do. So after the wedding, Colin graduated from dental school in the following months, and the Howells moved about 60 miles north of the picturesque village of Coleraine, and the which is like sort of on the coast of Northern Ireland. And Colin actually secured a wonderful position as a local dentist at his local dentist office. And Leslie started working at a clinic as a nurse. And from the outside, they were super picturesque. They were living this idyllic life. You know, they were, you know, really fine, upstanding members of the community. They were healthcare workers. Like, they just in their community had very, very high standing because nobody knew about the abortions and the stuff that they had hid and swept under the rug.
Everything looks good.
Everything looks great. And almost a year after their wedding, Leslie found out that she was pregnant again. And this time, the two decided they were finally ready to actually have a baby. In October of 1984, Leslie gave birth to their first child, Matthew. And it should have been a really nice, happy time for everyone, but the relationship just deteriorated from there. And the two were very devoted parishioners of their local Baptist church, and Colin's success as a dentist meant Leslie could leave her job as a nurse and stay at home with her young son, Matthew. And Colin was doing wonderfully well in his dental practice. And he ended up taking on a whole bunch more patients, and he bought out the practice. So he now owned this practice, and his patient panel swelled to like 35 or 40,000 people. Like, he had huge demand. So business was booming, and he actually went and ended up hiring on another dentist to help him because he was just so swamped.
How do you see that many people twice a year? I'm just saying.
Oh, Jesus. You can't, dude. You can't. So he started also leading his Baptist congregation's youth fellowship and regularly volunteering with other children's groups. Like, he was making sure he was very visible within the congregation as somebody who was helping and leading and guiding. And he was just, every opportunity, he was helping. So this gave him like the sense of sort of religious power that he had wanted since he was young. Like, this was what he was hoping to garner from being a missionary too, like somebody that other people, like parishioners and the rest of the congregation, would like look up to him as a religious leader. And he felt that.
Great.
I know. So he felt like he had this.
People, just saying.
Same here. He held this power in the church, and also he was like, you know, maintaining that moral high ground at work too. And Leslie Howell was sort of starting to itch to return to her career. She had worked really hard to be a nurse, and she wanted to work. She wanted to participate, and she wanted to help people. That's why she went to school. She missed going to work, and she felt like she was starting to lose herself in motherhood, as a lot of us do. Uh-huh. And you know, her big thing was like she was feeling like she was sort of like trapped and coerced into this situation because she was never interested in being a stay-at-home mom. She wanted to work and she wanted to be social, and she did not have that option anymore. She was at home and being expected to take care of their son. And Colin very clearly expected her to be this like housewife and mother and really nothing else. So,
because it looks good.
Sure. On the outside, it looks great. And in November of 1986, Leslie gives birth to their second child, Lauren. And now with two young children, Leslie has a lot more to do at home. And Colin is continuing to sort of just project this image of this doting husband and this Christian family man. And he's 28 years old at this point.
Wow.
And he's, again, you know, doing so, so well financially. After he had purchased that dental office and hired on that new dentist, you know, he's reaping all of those benefits because the more that they collectively see, you know, he's paying the dentist a salary, but he collects on all of that, all of those, that influx of cash. So that's all for him. And not only is Leslie feeling locked in her marriage with Colin. The pressures of raising the children are becoming really suffocating for her. And in June of 1989, they welcome a third child, Daniel. And this ended up being like too much for Leslie. She is feeling a lot of stress. Now, they had also taken out mortgage for this new home, and they had upgraded from their smaller home to this bigger home because of their growing family, which makes sense. But the house was pretty opulent for what Leslie felt like they needed. She's like, I mean, this seems a little ridiculous. And the outside of the house was gorgeous. The yard was beautiful. It was spacious. They had tons of land, but the inside wasn't actually fully finished. So, they had taken on, and Colin was essentially forcing Leslie into so much more additional work when she's already struggling to keep her head above water with these three kids.
Right.
And she's like, I don't want any of this. Like, I never wanted any of this. So
it's more house to have to take care of on top of
exactly,
all the children.
Exactly. He wanted to, you know, have his power reflected in this huge, opulent, beautiful house, which put them in some financial strain. This was a huge mortgage for them. And it was not something, even though he was doing really, really well in his dental practice, it seemed like he was always trying to live just outside of their means. Like, no matter how much money they made, and Leslie's finally like, oh, great, we're going to have some financial security, we're in a comfortable spot, there's something else that needs to be bought and something else that they need to add on. And now it's a whole bunch of construction to their home, which they don't really have the resources for, quite frankly. So that's a whole nother source of stress for both of them. So she's really feeling like all of the stress of this. So if she could ever work up the courage to leave Colin, like, she was like, I need to start figuring out a plan. Like, she's actively, like, the wheels are turning. Like, what do I do? Like, the house was so bad that they didn't have money to put carpeting over concrete floors on the ground floor of the building. So, like, the kids are crawling around on concrete. She's like, this is not ideal. This is not going to work for me.
Yep.
So she's like, if Colin's going to keep doing this shit, I cannot be with him. So at some point, she starts like fantasizing and actually thinking about escaping, and starts actually stockpiling her own cash and hiding it from Colin. So she's starting to really figure out a plan. Meanwhile, Colin doesn't really have a clue any of that is going on. He's feeling perfectly happy in his marriage. He's like, I've got this wifey at home who's watching all my kids, and I've got all this power, and things are going great for me. And additionally, he starts having an affair.
No shit.
With the former classmate.
Didn't see that
one
coming. Colin.
Once again, he's fucking breaking a commandment and doing all of the things that he really shouldn't be fucking doing. And he seemed to think it was better than getting a divorce, I guess, in the eyes of his congregation. Like, divorce would be super shameful. So
that's
a sin.
I can't do that.
This, like, blows my mind.
This guy's a dweeb. No, that's not...
Yes. Thank you.
Dweeb. I don't even know why I said dweeb. This guy's a douche. Okay.
He's a lot. He's a lot of different things. And eventually, Leslie found out, as they always do. And when she confronts him...
The wives always
...and
know,
his
guys.
Mistress, the affair ended, but the damage to the marriage had been done. And before Leslie could separate herself from the relationship, she becomes pregnant with a fourth child.
No.
I know. I know. Girl, get an IUD, Brotato Chip. Like, it's not... It doesn't have to be... Like, you're married now. You can
That's
do birth control, I feel like.
It's a sin.
Now, the baby did very little to salvage their marriage, as they never do. They always just make all the marriage problems a lot worse. Now, Leslie found herself unable to be intimate with her husband any longer. She's like, I cannot. She's like, I can't just keep having babies. If I'm not going to be able to birth control, like, I can't just... She's like, I don't, like, you know, between the affair, the financial stress, the four kids, Leslie's like, I am not feeling into this relationship physically anymore. So Colin's eyes start to wander again a little bit.
No shit.
And in the spring of 1990, 31-year-old Colin Howell meets Hazel Buchanan. And Hazel is a married mother of two. And
Double
Colin,
sin.
Colin is a married father of four.
Four?
And yeah, oh yeah, he's got four kids.
No, I know.
So yeah, both are very active in the church, them both being members of that same congregation, and not that did not stop either of them from striking up this very sexy, hot affair. And it was not known exactly how the relationship began, but throughout the whole summer of 1990, Colin kept visiting Hazel's home under the guise of giving her guitar lessons. Okay. And sometimes he even visited while Hazel's husband was there. And her husband worked as a police officer, and his name was Trevor. He would like go and like chat them both up, and then like Trevor would like go to sleep in the master bedroom, and then Colin and Hazel would like have their little trysts. You know, even when he was like sleeping in the same house with them.
Oh my gosh.
He is just the worst for a
lot of reasons. Tell me this whole med crime at the end of part two ends with Leslie murdering him, right? That's how it's all going to end.
I wish I could say that that was how this ended, but that's not how this ends.
All right. So, it ends with me murdering him instead because
there you go.
I'm done with him.
Yep. So Hazel is very attracted to Colin's intelligence, his social stature, his stature within the congregation, the fact that he's a dentist, he's earning all this money. So she is just head over heels for this guy. And for all of his medical education, it seemed like Colin just keeps making the same fucking mistake over and over again, because guess what?
She's pregnant.
Woo! Congrats. You're having a baby. So Hazel is now fucking pregnant. And now he's like, fuck. How do I get out of this fucking hot mess I've created for myself?
Oh, jeez.
And Hazel at the time is not actually sure if the child is Colin's or Trevor's, because she's married, remember?
Of course.
She's being intimate with both people. So she was terrified of giving birth specifically because Colin happened to be a carrier of a rare genetic condition called syndactyly. And syndactyly is actually a pretty benign condition. It's not super harmful, but you may have heard of this before, but it's actually on the common side too, and it's easily treatable. And it's when a child is born with fingers and or toes that are conjoined between the webbing between the fingers. They have like...
So they got webbed?
You know what I mean? Yeah, essentially, yeah. And
okay.
It happens in about one in every 2,500 infants. So like not totally unheard of. And these days it's actually very easily correctable with surgery. And usually the bones underneath the skin are like all fully functioning and intact. And really 9 times out of 10, it is a simple procedure of just separating the webbing between the fingers and restoring
like
that functionality to fingers.
Snip.
Yes, exactly. And for Colin and Hazel, though, Hazel took it as like, if this baby comes out and happens to have syndactyly, then everyone's going to know because Colin had a couple of kids with syndactyly. Everyone's going to know that this is Colin's baby and not Trevor's baby, which is not like true. I don't think anybody would have probably made that connection.
But
that's
if you're
silly.
I see how you're like, be uber paranoid, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's not like something is like as distinguished of like, oh, all of a sudden I have a baby that's a different race than my other children. That's a dead giveaway.
Yes,
but I can see
exactly
where you're like doing things that are in the wrong, that you're nitpicking like every little thing thinking someone's gonna find out.
Exactly. So this would not have been any sort of smoking gun, like by any means, but yeah. Either way, they are much more concerned about their image, again, than the life of a baby. So, again, Colin offers this, like, solution.
Hey, I know a guy.
Maybe he'll give me a discount this time because of all the
Jesus
business
Christ.
I've given this guy. So he whisks her off to London. And despite the nature of this whole trip, Colin's feelings for Hazel were only intensified when they had that little trip to London. And this was in the late summer of 1990. And then the weeks that followed, Colin became a lot less secretive about seeing Hazel and a little bit more obvious, a little bit more brazen. And he even took the risk of like going out with her, meeting her in public, going out to dinner, going out, you know, going
That's
out doing things.
Actually.
I know it is. Yeah. So there's that. Soon, though, they were spotted, and a church elder who knew both Colin and Hazel saw them together at a park and grew suspicious. So he called Colin and confronted him about the possible affair, which Colin, of course, denied, but the church elder was not convinced. And Colin, being as brazen and stupid as he is, could not evade suspicion forever. And he didn't really, he realized he wasn't really interested in hiding this anymore. He's like, you know what? Like, between me and my wife, it kind of seems like things are over. And I just need to figure out a way to remove my wife from the scenario without looking like a sinner.
Fuck. Yeah. Shit. So,
yeah. Devin sees where this is going.
Damn it.
So in the fall of 1990, 31-year-old Colin Howell's marriage is, you know, sort of teetering, right? To be fair, he did this. He put that there.
No shit.
By giving, you know, getting affairs and just being a dick in general. So matters kind of grew worse when a former nurse that Leslie Howell worked with suspected that her husband was cheating again, only because Leslie was confiding in her and telling her about all these weird behaviors. And she's like, girl, wake the fuck up. He's obviously having another affair. So she starts now worrying about this. And Colin had recently taken off to go on a quote unquote golf trip with a quote unquote work friend. And Leslie confided in her pastor that she was worried that her husband might not have been golfing. And the pastor decided to take it upon himself to conduct his own little investigation, which is kind of iconic.
I love that.
He drives to where they were, you know, supposed to be golfing and didn't find them. And then he ends up finding Colin days later and confronts him. And Colin, of course, denies the accusation. And he was this good Christian man. He would never do that. He would never cheat on his spouse. But the pastor did not believe him because Leslie wasn't the only person who brought suspicions about Colin. And a few weeks earlier, that church elder had shared with the pastor, hey, I saw him out with Hazel. So seems like something improper is happening here. And nothing really sat right with him. So the pastor was suspicious and he went to Hazel's home to question her, too. Hazel had a harder time lying and she started crying and breaking down and she just had a full on confession to the affair.
Because she has a conscience. I was just going to say she has a soul.
I know. So she's crying. She's, you know, confessing to the affair. And after hearing Hazel's confession, the pastor advises her, tell the truth to the people that are involved. Tell your husband. Tell Leslie Howell. The truth needs to come out. This has already happened. The marriages are over. You know, don't worry about the image. Just like stop hurting people. Stop fucking with people, please. Yep. So proceed with honesty. And despite the affair, Hazel still desperately wanted to be a good Christian. So she proceeded with honesty and broke the news to her husband, Trevor. And meanwhile, Colin at home, realizing that suspicion is growing within the congregation, admits the second affair to Leslie. And he wasn't fully honest with his admission because actually both Hazel and Colin were a little bit shady about this because neither one of them admitted that they ever had sex. They both said that this was an emotional affair. They had feelings for each other, but nothing was ever physical. Meanwhile, they had just come from London having a fucking abortion.
Correct.
So that's not true. So believing that it was an obstacle that they could just, you know, navigate through, both couples agreed to keep the affair a secret and maintain their marriages. But while Trevor Buchanan made efforts to put everything behind him, Leslie Howell was less willing to move on because this was the second time her husband had fucked her over like this. She had already mortgaged her entire self to make him happy. And she's like, are you fucking kidding me with this shit? You can't even keep it in your pants? Like, hello? So she's like, I don't know. This is not working for me. I don't really think this is happening. So in the days and weeks after she received the news, she withdrew even more, and it seemed like she had become a lot more depressed, unfortunately. And according to author Derek Henderson, she started taking antidepressants, and she developed a nasty drinking habit. And in the few weeks after the initial confession, Colin revealed to Leslie that his affair with Hazel had actually been sexual. And this might have been because the pastor had actually gone and stripped Colin of all of his volunteer roles all of his like leadership roles within the church. And Colin was feeling like, well, fuck it then, I guess, if I, you know, if I don't have to worry about that.
Right.
So, or maybe he was having like burning religious guilt and felt like he needed to get it off his chest. I don't know. Either way, for Leslie, it was the last straw. Now, Colin would go on to say that Leslie then physically attacked Colin. She started clawing at him with her fingers. Then she ran into the bathroom, locked herself inside. And there was like some sort of physical altercation that happened out of this. Now, when she had locked herself in the bathroom, she grabbed a bottle of acetaminophen and swallowed as many pills as she physically could. And she stumbled out of the house and got into the car and drove away. Obviously, acetaminophen is like this mild painkiller that's available over the counter, and you can overdose on it. If you take, you know, way too much, your liver essentially cannot process or filter anything. It can put you into acute liver failure, and then all the things that your liver usually filters out of your blood will
pile up,
just build up, and then it can cause intense fatigue, confusion, abdominal pain, jaundice, all of the signs of liver failure. And Leslie would have known all this, having been a nurse. So she, in no doubt, experienced some discomfort in her body after having taken that. And so luckily, Colin, you know, found the bottle and saw what happened, and he actually called for help. And eventually they did find Leslie unharmed, and she ended up in a hospital where she stayed for 3 days recovering from her misuse of the acetaminophen. But her mental health was still essentially in shambles. And by all appearances, Leslie remained essentially inconsolable over the state of her life. Mm-hmm. And 31-year-old Colin and 30-year-old Leslie pursued marital counseling within their church. And it seemed like Colin at the time was willing to try again. And Leslie was too, you know, for that time being. And for some time, he had no contact with Hazel during this time. He really was trying to kind of put that away and focus on his marriage. But by March of 1991, so just 4 months after the overdose happened, Colin starts seeing Hazel again. And the affair resumed as if it never stopped. And
he tried
it did not
real hard.
Oh, yeah, real hard.
Yeah,
good
real
effort.
Hard.
A for effort, asshole. Yeah. And it did not take Leslie long to figure out that it had resumed. So then in late April of 1991, Leslie's father came to live in the house with the Howells, and he claimed to be suffering from flu-like symptoms early on in his stay. And although it's possible that Leslie brought him into the house to help her, she might have hoped that her father's presence would maybe like help with her feelings of turmoil and isolation and maybe help turn things around in the house a little bit. But unfortunately, one night shortly after Leslie's dad moved in, Leslie and Colin returned from a night at the theater to discover that her father had collapsed on the kitchen floor.
No.
He had no pulse. They called the family doctor, who came to the house and pronounced Leslie's father dead and claimed that the man had suffered from a massive heart attack. And at the time, there was really no reason to suspect that anything nefarious had happened.
Oh, fuck.
Because it all looked very natural. Given what happens later in this story, a lot of people have now gone back to question, was this very sudden death really a sudden cardiac death, or did something else happen that was missed?
Son
but unfortunately, we'll never know for sure. And both Leslie and Colin are still really fearing, you know, all the public shame of a divorce. So they're still trying to figure out a way out of this. But Colin, it has occurred to him that there's another way. Just like the times he had gotten his partners pregnant out of wedlock, it would require doing something that is completely against his faith. But as long as he kept it
It'll
a secret,
face.
Nobody will know. In May of 1991, Colin told Hazel his new plan. And apparently he was convinced that the future of their relationship relied basically on her willingness to end her own marriage. Like, they would both need to remove their partners so that they could just be together. And neither of them wanted to actually have to have a divorce on either of their records. So 10 p.m. on May 18th of 1991, Colin puts his children to bed, and as he tucked each one in, He listened for the sounds of Leslie moving around downstairs, as she typically did at night. And like she did on many evenings, Leslie was enjoying a drink on the couch. Remember, she had really had a problem with drinking recently. Uh-huh. And by 11 p.m., she had dozed off. And Colin knew it was time for him to jump into action. And he starts by blocking the children's rooms with a hockey stick. Like, he blocked the door with a hockey stick so they couldn't open it from the outside.
Did he get it from your house? Or just asking.
Probably. There's so many. You are so fucking funny, Devin. Oh my God. You kill me. Shit. So the hockey stick that belongs to my children is blocking his children from getting out of their rooms. And he ends up putting on a pair of surgical gloves and he goes into the garage. And he takes a hose and he connects the hose to his car's exhaust pipe and he turns on the car. And he then runs the hose into the house and he maneuvers it into the living room, pointing the other end of it at Leslie's sleeping face. And it was just like his dentistry practice where he's putting somebody under with gas, right? And this was not the same gas that he used, obviously. The fumes from the car exhaust.
I would hope not.
Were something very different. And they ran through the hose and into Leslie's body. And her lungs started filling with carbon monoxide. Now, high concentrations of carbon monoxide can cause death within minutes. And when it's inhaled, it's odorless, it's tasteless, which makes it very dangerous. And that's why all the houses now have all of these carbon monoxide detectors. And essentially what happens is the carbon monoxide molecules bind to the surface of hemoglobin molecules, which is where oxygen molecules usually bind to be distributed around the body. And when the surface of the hemoglobin is all taken up by the carbon monoxide molecules, there's then no room for the hemoglobin to carry oxygen around the body. So
we're getting real sciencey here and I love it.
We really are. Sorry.
No, I love it.
But that's what causes the shutdown. And that's why carbon monoxide poisoning mimics like not breathing well, because you're not circulating oxygen. Now, when you present to the ER with carbon monoxide poisoning, they put a SAT probe on you, it's going to read 100% every time because the SAT probes cannot differentiate between oxygen molecules on the hemoglobin and carbon monoxide molecules on
I
the hemoglobin.
Not know
so it's
that.
Really interesting.
I did
Isn't
not
that
know
wild?
That. I had no yes. idea about that. That's It'll, so interesting.
That's a marker that they teach you in school. Hey, no. This guy comes in with dizziness, nausea, confusion, headaches. He's SATing 100%. 100%. And he has a wood stove in his house. What's your first concern?
I know.
So that's something that they teach you. So it's literally your organs, your tissues start being deprived of oxygen and your body can shut down within minutes as if you're just not breathing. And again, it's odorless, it's tasteless, and that's why it's so dangerous. It can be present in the house and nobody would know about it unless you have a detector that goes off because you can't even tell when you're inhaling it that you're inhaling it. And it probably, and now that has become actually a method that people use for suicide at times, is closing off their vehicles, like in a garage, opening up their car windows, turning on their vehicles, and just letting the carbon monoxide fill the room until they pass out and go to sleep, which is just so sad. So this probably would have put Leslie into a bit of a deeper sleep eventually, but it would have created some symptoms that might have been alarming to her in the very, very early stages of exposure. So the smell of the fumes might have gotten to her, or maybe she started to kind of come to because she was feeling kind of dizzy and kind of out of it and something didn't feel right. But either way, she did start kind of waking up a little bit and stirring. And Colin kind of sat and watched his wife inhale the poison. And when she started to stir and regain consciousness, she actually even started to stand and tried to like call out for her kids. Like, so that shows that she had some awareness of what was going on. And remember, she was probably intoxicated with alcohol too at this point. But Colin held her down. He held her down and he grabbed a blanket and he throws the blanket over her head. So he creates like a tent with the hose and directs even more carbon monoxide into her system. So after a few moments, after holding her down, she stilled and Colin knew that she was gone. Colin's plan was far from over. And that is where I'm going to leave you for part two.
I hate him.
I know. I know. Me too. You guys, this gets so much worse. I cannot stress enough.
This is
bonks. It's bonks.
For a guy who hates to sin, he's sure as hell doing a whole fucking lot of it.
Like way too much, sir. Like way too much. You should reevaluate your life choices.
I mean,
genuinely.
Maybe be like okay with like sinning a little bit just so that maybe you're like, know the balance. Because...
And not murdering people. And like maybe just go touch some grass, you know? Like just
go,
you know,
smoke some grass.
Get a fucking hobby, bro. Like I just
go clean some teeth.
None of this. I don't understand people like this that must have this perfect picturesque image and this are just garbage on the inside. What are you doing?
It's not getting them anything. Because
if you're gonna be a garbage human, at least fucking own it. You know, at least say, this is my dumpster. I'm a garbage human.
And
this is the dumpster I live in. I've lit it on fire. And fuck all of you guys. Like, at least be that, you know?
Right.
I don't know. People are the worst.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for joining us and getting pissed off all the time with all the freaking awesome humans that we talk about.
I am so good at pissing you guys off, I think.
If you want to continue listening, you can check us out on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can catch us on YouTube at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can search for us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you want to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
Send us any emails, suggestions, crazy stories, ideas, say hello at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there, for fuck's sake.
Stay away from carbon monoxide.
Yes, don't do any of that.
And trashy humans.
Human life is more important than your image, I promise. Like, let's not play around that, okay? I promise. Don't have to kill anybody. Just own it. You know, be who you are. Love you. Peace.
Bye-bye.